We've learned a lot about MP3s and how to create good ones, and we'll have some tips for you there. Some interesting myths that are widely adopted about MP3s and encoding. I'll tell you why MP2 files have become important to us. We'll talk about RMS. Okay, MPEG. There are a lot of MPEG standards. MP3 is one of them. All the MPEG audio standards are lossy compression algorithms. That means when you compress, you make it smaller and you will lose some quality. And if you decode that file and make it a full file again and recompress it and do it again every time, it's going to get worse and worse and worse. So every time you compress and decompress, it gets worse. That's going to come up later on. MP3 is a standard, it's the layer 3 standard of MPEG 1. Okay? So MP3 is not MPEG 3. That's a very important thing. People get confused about it. There are two standards we work with. The other one is MP2, which is layer 2 of the MPEG 1 standard. Right? Now there's, in addition to MPEG 1, there's MPEG 2, 3, and 4 now. They have a variety of purposes. There's some cross-compatibility. But the important thing is that MPEG 2 and MPEG 3 are closely related protocols. Okay. Important thing about MP3. This is layer 3 of the MPEG 1 standard. This was designed as a codec for final encoding. That means you can encode something once in MP3 and you decode it to play it back. Right? You walk around with your iPod, your iRiver, whatever you have, you can listen to MP3s, and the very last step in creating those is encoding them in the MP3 format. It is, of course, as we know, the standard for everything we do. Right? Anybody here not using MP3? What do you use? Do you use AAC only? AAC only. So people who... Okay. Right. But anybody producing something ought to at least create MP3s. In podcasting today, 64K bits is pretty much the standard. Higher is done by some people. A couple of interesting things that we learned. One is, this is a tip, your sample rate should be a multiple of 11 blah blah, because there are some players like Flash and others that will not play other things. So 11.025, 22.5, and 44.1. Sorry, 22.05 and 44.1. So a multiple of 11 is what you've got to use. And joint stereo works very well. Some of the other stereo options, again, do not. There are some players that can't take other things. By the way, these slides will be available somewhere, somehow. I'm just not sure. So you don't have to take copious notes here. Okay. Interesting history of 2.5 years of doing MP3s. When we started out in June of 2003, I encoded everything at 32K bits per second. Now, remember, we'll come back to this too, but 32K bits per second is the number of bits per second. So if you double it, you get twice as big a file. We got complaints that the files were too large. Well, a year later, we went up to 48K, we made the files bigger, and no one complained. Now, we're up to 64K. If anything, people say they want bigger quality. So what you see is, over time, there is a trend for higher bit rates, larger files. And the question is, today we're at 64K, where are we going to be in the future? That's one of the reasons we like to get all of our originals in a much higher quality format than 64K, because certainly there will be a time where we can encode at 128. Okay, here's a myth for you. Well, I've already told you it's a myth, so I can't very well spring this on you. Anybody out there thinks that stereo files are larger than mono? Okay. Jim, that's right. Well, we've straightened out Jim. This is a myth. If I have a file at 64K bits per second, it's 64K bits per second, whether it's got one track, two tracks, three tracks, four tracks, five tracks, whatever. That's the number of bits per second, not bits per second per track. Okay? So if I take and I go to my MP3 file, and I say, make it a stereo file instead of a mono file, it doesn't become twice as big. Now, what has to happen is that if you have different information in the left and the right track, some of the bits have to go to each track. And so you will get a reduction in quality, perhaps, but you will not make a file that's twice as large. That's very important. A good encoder, and most of them are good encoders, they're smart enough to optimize this. So for example, something we do a lot, if you send stereo to the encoder and the left and right are exactly the same, I don't mean they sound the same in your ears, I mean they're digitally the same because you copied the left track to the right track in your software, the encoders say there is no left minus right information. There is no difference between left and right. I will therefore use none of the bits available to encode stereo. You get the same quality with stereo as you get with mono if left and right are identical. And the quality will degrade based on how much difference there is between the two tracks. No, it's still stereo. It's real stereo, right? But you can't hear it because left and right are the same. So we use stereo because there are some players, obscure players, that won't play mono, right? We have, you know, hundreds of thousands of listeners. We have to work on everybody's device. So we're using 64K bit per second stereo, joint stereo, and almost everything we do is mono. It's mono source, but it's encoded as stereo. Okay, here's another one of my favorite myths. I'll give you the clue on that. People say, oh, music, you got to encode that at 128K bits per second, but it's only voice. Voice, you can encode at a lower bit rate. This is wrong, wrong, wrong. Music, which is complex, admittedly, to reproduce it accurately requires more information, perhaps. But the key is that music also hides the artifacts that you pick up. You know, you've all heard artifacts in speech. You've heard the swishing sound. You hear it over sibilance, right? When someone speaks that way, you'll get a lot of strange sound in the MP3, especially at low bit rate. In music, that's masked by the complexity of the music. In voice, it's not, especially because you tend to hear voices over and over again and get used to them. So sibilance creates those things. The fact is that you need, for people to accept it, you need this at least as high a bit rate for voice as you do for music. So please get over the idea that voice doesn't require the same level of encoding. Okay, question of sample rates. As I said, some players only accept 11 or multiples of 11. There's a theory called the Nyquist theorem, which says that the highest frequency you can reproduce is half the sample rate. So what that means is that at 44K, I can produce 22 kilohertz audio. At 22K, I can produce 11 kilohertz audio. Now, all the voice information is 11 and below. So you don't need that octave between 11 and 22. That's the highest octave. That's the last octave of human hearing. It's irrelevant for voice. And in fact, if you get rid of it, which we do, we run a low-pass filter and filter out anything above 11, we present less information to the encoder. The encoder, therefore, has an easier job of focusing on what's important. So we're still debating this internally, but I tend to use a lower sample rate rather than a higher one, specifically to give less information to the encoder, making the encoder's life easier. These are complex encoders, by the way. So sample rate is a funny thing. Sample rate is in the original lossless file. It's how many times the audio is sampled per second. 44,000 or 22,000 samples of the audio every second. By the time it gets into MP3, there are no specific sample rates anymore. It's kept with the MP3 for later decoding, but in fact, if you look at an MP3 frame, it's filled with all sorts of what we call psychoacoustic stuff, because the MP3 encoder is just out there trying to say, oh, I've got so much information to get into a very small number of bits. What can I throw away? What isn't going to matter in the playback? And it does a fairly complex job of encoding and compressing that. So yes, there's a sample rate. The sample rate has nothing to do with the size of the file in MP3. In WAV format, double the sample rate, you double the size of the file. In MP3, the file size is determined totally by the bit rate of the file, not the sample rate. Question over here? Shouldn't at 22, it depends what the player is. Of course, the one we're most fussy about is Flash, because Flash is everywhere and we use it a lot. Any multiple of 11 seems to work well in Flash in most players. We haven't come across one that requires 44. If you've got one, let me know. We'll just have to go to 44. Okay, don't record in MP3 unless you plan to play back your original. Again, MP3 is a final release format. It's not designed to be decoded and re-encoded, and you will pick up just awful sounding stuff. That's why we've gone to MP2. MP2 was specifically designed in the broadcasting business to be used as an intermediate format. You can move MP2s around, you can decode them, and you can re-encode them later as MP3s, and they work quite well. So that's a problem. And when we get people who encode it MP3 and send us audio, a lot of times we can't use it. Nothing's better than a WAV file. WAV file is lossless, it's beautiful, but they're huge files, right? I recorded all day yesterday, mono. Four gigs will run 13 hours. It sounds like a lot, but that's 4 gigs of memory. Yeah? Mini discs are pretty good. We use them all the time. I got to keep moving, unfortunately. So if you have to record an MP3, if you have to record on an iRiver or something like that, use the highest bit rate possible because it has to be re-encoded at 64. If you record at 160 or 320 bits per second on a portable device, you'll get pretty good audio when we have to redo it and bring it back out at 64. MP2, as I talked about, we explained what that was. And it's an intermediate format. It is the standard in radio, and that's why we use it. And the standard is 128K bits per track. Now, in this case, what we're saying is purposely, because we assume that stereo is real stereo, if you use two tracks, do it at 256K. One track, 128K. And this is the standard in the broadcast industry. Okay, and 44.1 is the preferred standard there. So that's... It's lossy. It's a funny kind of standard because it is actually not as good a compressor as MP3. It's not preserving and reproducing as much data, but it suffers less from artifacts, and that's the key. All right? Okay. Yeah. MP2, much less. Much less. AIFF is the Apple version of WAV. It's a lossless file format. And as we decode MP2s to WAV or AIFF and back, you pick up much fewer problems than you do in MP3. Yeah. MP4 video files have a totally different encoding for audio. They're 48K sample rate. And they're using, what's the codec in there, H.264, I think, or something like that. That's a totally different world. So, okay, quiz, which sample's louder? Okay, this is an important thing. The one on the right, the peaks are higher, right? So if you're looking at the peaks and you're measuring the peak voltage, that's going to seem louder, but it's not, because the one on the left is fatter, and fatter is power, and power is loudness. It is not the heights of the peaks that matter. It is the area under the curve, and that's what loudness is all about. And so we've got a problem because, as you'll see, we actually now are building shows out of components. We have to normalize things. We have to make sure that the loudness of everything is the same. If you have an iPod, there's software in iTunes that's actually balancing it. If you didn't have that, if you turn that off, you'll hear the podcasts that come in have tremendously varying loudness. And it's a real problem from podcast to podcast. It's really a problem within a podcast. So there are two kinds of normalization, peak and RMS. RMS stands for root mean square. It has to do with how you compute the area under a sine wave. Not important, but the important thing is that we need to do RMS normalization. We need to make sure that two pieces of sound have the same loudness, not the same peak levels. There are relatively few pieces of software that know how to do that, and that's a problem for us. Yeah? Are there any other questions? I went through so fast. Yeah? Right. Yeah, let me tell you a little bit more about step-by-step what the audio is like. And let's just talk for the moment about the body of a show. It's a one-track file. We're not mixing any music at this point. We get the stuff in one format or another. We convert it using our tools to the editable format, which is WAV or AIFF. How many PC users? How many Mac users? Whoa! Wow! What a ratio, huh? Yeah, 2% of the whole conference. I'm impressed. I use both a Mac and a PC, but for historical reasons, I still do my audio on a PC. And I use SoundForge for my single-track work, and I use an application called N-Track Studio, N-Track Studio, for my multi-track work. Paul works in Final Cut Pro for all of his stuff on a Mac. Daniel's got something weird. What are you using? Oh, you're using Soundtrack Pro. Okay. That's the audio part of Final Cut Pro. You know, the first thing you're going to do when you get this audio, and we're talking about audio that you record of yourselves or from a conference, first thing is to listen to it, right? What I will typically do is I will bring the audio in and I'll do peak normalization because sometimes the files are so quiet I can't hear them. So I'll just peak normalize it because that makes it something that's visible on the screen so you can see the waveform instead of it being a little tiny thing, and you can listen to it. And that doesn't substantially change the quality of the sound in any way. Then the next thing you want to do is your editing. And that's going through and deciding where you're going to cut. Don't waste your time doing volume adjustments on sound that you might cut out. Daniel, in the class yesterday, pointed out a problem with a lot of things, which is if you make volume adjustments, or in his case, put marks in, you know, to mark regions of the sound, and then you cut out sound, sometimes those marks don't end up where you expect them to be. So you're better off getting the file edited first, okay? After you edit the file, then it's time to go in and make your volume and noise adjustments. If you have to do noise reduction, for example, that's a good time to do it is at that point. By the way, at every stage, save your file. And don't save it, don't overwrite the old one, save it as a new name. Now, some of these have some standard names, you know, some of them we make up, but, might name it filename.peaknormalized.wave because you know that's what you did. You peak normalized it. Blah, blah, dot edited dot thing. You know what step you did. And save those. They're big. They're huge, honking, uncompressed files, but you'll be glad you did. And you can always come back later and delete the unused ones. So if you do noise reduction, that's usually something that, you know, noise reduction is something that less is usually better, and sometimes you'll over-normalize it and go back to listen to the original and see you liked it more. So that's, again, why you want to have multiple versions of things. After you do all your editing, then it's time, let's forget about our automated system for the moment. What you've got now is you have one track, one clip of audio ready to be mixed into the rest of your podcast, okay? So now you go into your multi-track software, that's what you're using, and you have your intros and your outros and the bodies of your shows, and you've edited them all, and you have your music, you lay it out on your multi-track thing. And this is where now you adjust by sliding them around the timing, and you adjust your volume of each track separately. Now it's important that you didn't do too much normalization before that, because if you have something that's peak normalized, like I just said I do, if you need to make it louder, you're out of luck because your peaks already go up close to zero. You can't make it louder by running up a fader. You'll just clip it. So you have to know what you're doing if you're going to peak normalize it because you can't make it louder. Now, you can do it another way. You can make everything quieter. You can take the one piece of sound that's going up to peak that you can't make any louder and make all the other sounds mix to that level. Bring everything down, okay? Because you're going to get another step to be able to make the thing louder. So now you do a mix. And this file is always called the mixdown. Filename.mixdown.wave. And that is essentially, at this point, your best quality original, regardless of the overall volume. Overall volume doesn't matter at that point because you got one more chance. But this sounds the way you'd like it to sound under the best possible circumstances. That's a mixdown. The next step is called mastering. And in mastering, what you're now going to do is make up for the deficiencies of your medium. right? You're going to say, oh, my listeners aren't going to be able to hear this on beautiful speakers or beautiful headphones. They're going to have to hear it on earbuds, on a train, when it's an MP3 encoded at 64K. So now I have to do certain things to accommodate those processes. And in mastering, what we'll do is we will, first of all, we'll cut out the lows, we'll cut out the highs. Typically, I cut the lows at about 80 hertz, cut the highs at about 11 kilohertz, because that's information that I don't want to give to the encoder. I want to give the encoder a clue. I want to tell the encoder, you're not going to need to worry about that sound. Then, after doing that high and low pass filtering, we'll do RMS normalization. That's the stage where that comes in. And that's to bring the overall loudness of the file up to what is pretty much a standard. Of course, there is no real standard, so you have to sort of make up your own. In SoundForge, I'm now using what they refer to as minus 14 dB. Paul's still a little hotter. We talked about that. But, there's a loudness sort of specification, and it's rubbery, it's tough. But this is the point at which you fatten up that waveform using RMS normalization. What do you use, Paul? What tool for normalizing? Bias Peak Pro on the Mac, SoundForge. Anybody else have a normalization tool they use? They know? Yeah, what is it? Normalize does? Okay, so there's a command line tool for Mac, at least, called Normalize. Linux, Mac, okay. So look for that. And interesting, ours is called Normalize, too. I thought we had a unique name. So at that point, you're making a normalized file. So now what you have is something that is mastered. You have made, in a high-quality format, something which has been adapted to the vagaries of the listening environment and the decoding environment. The last step is encoded as an MP3. I had a question over here. Oh, okay. Variable bit rate. Don't use variable bit rate. There are many players that don't play variable bit rate. I mean, it's great. Variable bit rate literally says the encoder is smart enough to say, hey, I need more bits or less bits because I have a bunch of silence, for example. Silence, not too many bits required. Let's make a smaller file. The problem is there are a whole lot of players that won't play that. What's that? iRiver will crash on VBRs? Okay. Yeah, there's no way for anything to know how long an MP3 is because each frame has in it how long it is. You can't measure the size of the file, divide by 64K bits and how long it is. So that's another problem with variable bit rate. But it's really incompatible. Yeah. Nope. Once you're into MP3, you're done. Once you have MP3, you should never, ever touch it. Yeah, one of the best kept secrets of MP3s is if the sample rates and bit rates are the same, you can just glue them together. You can concatenate MP3 files. Now, it's important that you always have silence at the point where you concatenate them because the MP3 spec says something about the bit reservoir. There's the ability to spill bits from one frame to the next. But if you actually have one end in silence and the next start in silence, you can just glue them together. That's it.